first episode of Patriot Podcast, I discussed Andrew Pickens, the Scots-Irish militia leader whose heroism at Cowpens earned him a promotion and a medal. Before Cowpens, Colonel Pickens was famous for a campaign that is little known today. The British had taken the Georgia capital city of Savannah, ousting the Continental government and reinstating exiled Royal Governor James Wright. The first 2 weeks of February 1779 saw a series of skirmishes that represented a very important struggle over Georgia and South Carolina at that time, culminating in the battle at Kettle Creek. Pickens, Colonel John Dooley, and Dooley's adjutant, Lieutenant Colonel Elijah Clark, would defeat a force nearly twice their size, forcing the British to quit Augusta and, for a time, effectively hamper efforts to gain control over all of Georgia. Interestingly enough, it would be Pickens, Clark, and Lieutenant Colonel Henry Lee III who would take Augusta from the British just over 2 years later. I'm Cambrielle Clackham, and welcome to Patriot Podcast. Today's episode is Two Critical Weeks. Born September 13, 1739, in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, Andrew Pickens' family moved around quite a bit throughout his childhood, but as an adult, he settled in Abbeville, South Carolina. He and his wife, Rebecca Calhoun, had 12 children together at their Hopewell plantation, 10 of whom survived to adulthood. A devout Presbyterian and hard fighter, Pickens was known as the Fighting Elder. A veteran of the Anglo-Cherokee War, he preferred to cultivate relationships with the Cherokee and Creek, even negotiating the purchase of land that is present-day Pickens County, Georgia. The Cherokee had great respect for this warrior and called him Skyagunsta, or the Wizard Owl, which fit the tall, slender man and his long, narrow face with a beaky nose. Being Presbyterian, Pickens supported the revolutionary cause. He was elected captain of a small militia and began recruiting a brigade which trained at his own blockhouse. Since the Battle of Monmouth Courthouse, New Jersey, in June of 1778, there were no major battles going on up north. If you remember from my previous episodes, Governor Wright had told Lord George Germain, Secretary of State for British Colonies, that Georgia and the Carolinas were just teeming with loyalists ready to take up arms for Great Britain. Though a number of skirmishes and naval battles had occurred in the South over the prior few years, no serious attempts had been made by the British since the failed attempt on Charlestown, South Carolina in 1776. As 1778 drew to a close, General Sir Henry Clinton, Commander-in-Chief of British Forces in America, was preparing to shift the war to the South. 1778 had not been a very good year for the British in America. They had been forced to withdraw from Philadelphia, returning the Continental capital to the Americans, and had taken heavy casualties at Monmouth Courthouse as they attempted to withdraw. With the entrance of France and Spain into the war that year, and Great Britain spending money hand over fist on her military worldwide, things were more complicated. On December 23, 1778, British forces under Lieutenant Colonel Archibald Campbell arrived at Tybee Island off the coast of South Georgia. 6 days later, Campbell marched into the Georgia capital city of Savannah and flanked Major General Robert Howe's force, capturing the city and nearly 500 Patriot defenders. Brigadier General Augustine Prevost arrived in Savannah just a few weeks later, assuming command, and Campbell left for Augusta up the Savannah River on January 24th. Augusta was defended by a 1,000-man force of militia under Brigadier General Andrew Williamson, which retreated from the city as the British marched in on January 31st, exchanging a few volleys as they escaped across the river. From Augusta, Campbell set out to recruit loyalists to fight for the crown. He attempted to scare Georgia residents into fighting for him by threatening to seize their property, and he sent out officers to recruit. One of those was Colonel John Boyd. Another was Lieutenant Colonel John Hamilton, the Scottish-born Virginia native who would recruit and command the Royal North Carolina Regiment. If you've been listening to Patriot Podcast, you're probably fairly familiar with Hamilton's North Carolina Royals. From Savannah, Prevost sent Major William Gardner to take over Port Royal Island on the South Carolina coast. Gardner's force landed at Hilton Head Island on February 1st and were attacked by militia. Escorted by the Navy, the British advance up the Broad River toward Beaufort was marked by the destruction and conflagration of homes and plantations, particularly of those who had harassed them. Captain John de Treville commanded a force of 20 Continentals and some militia at Fort Littleton on Port Royal Island, just 2 miles south of Beaufort. The triangular tabby fort, built in 1762 to defend the point against the Spanish, held a magazine, tabby barracks, a bastion, and 2 half-bastions. By the beginning of February, the Patriots at Fort Littleton learned that Gardner was coming with 200 men and a howitzer. The militia ran without a fight. Seeing no possible way to defend the fort with 20 against 200, de Treville destroyed the fort, spiked the cannon, and fled with a 2-pounder. When Gardner learned of this, it seemed like an easy win. Meanwhile, in camp at Perrysburg, South Carolina, roughly 20 miles up the Savannah River from the Georgia capital, Major General Benjamin Lincoln, Commander-in-Chief of Southern Continental Forces, was gathering a force to attempt to repel the British in Georgia. He sent Brigadier General John Ashe with a force of over 1,000 militiamen to meet with Williamson, who had quit Augusta. When communication from Port Royal Island ceased, Lincoln sent Brigadier General William Moultrie to aid the Patriots in the South Carolina Islands. The night of February 1st, Moultrie reached the camp of 300 Charlestown militia at Port Royal Ferry across Whale Branch from the north end of Port Royal Island. Joined by Beaufort militia, Moultrie led his men across on the ferry the next morning, a crossing which took nearly all day to accomplish. Through the night, they marched for Beaufort, arriving the morning of the 3rd. While Moultrie was inspecting the remains of Fort Littleton, he received word that the British were nearly upon them, so he rushed back to his men and prepared to meet the enemy. As they marched, he learned that the British were not so close after all, and Moultrie decided to use the time to find an appropriate battle site. But after waiting in formation for some time, he received another message saying that Gardner was headed to the Port Royal Ferry. Gardner, however, had been unable to cross Whale Branch at the ferry due to low tide, and so had turned back toward Beaufort. Moultrie brought his men toward a swamp in hopes of lying in ambush for Gardner along the roadside. Gardner had already placed his men along the edges of the road, concealed by woods and swamp. Moultrie made battle formations with his militia, the Beaufort militia, and Captain de Treville with his handful of Continentals. De Treville himself attended the 2-pounder which they had carried away from Fort Littleton. With one of the 6-pounders, the Americans destroyed the British howitzer, and the battle raged until Moultrie's men came close to running out of cartridges from musket and cannon. Moultrie was about to call a retreat when Gardner was forced to retreat, having taken heavy casualties. Both armies withdrew, neither one technically winning, but the battle had the effect of repelling Gardner's attempt on the islands. The Battle of Beaufort, or the Battle of Port Royal Island, was notable for being the only battle in which 2 signers of the Declaration of Independence, Edward Rutledge and Thomas Hayward, Jr., fought. It was also a notable example of militia going toe-to-toe with British regulars and holding their own without fleeing or faltering. Back in Georgia, Hamilton and Boyd were busy recruiting Georgia Loyalists, while Pickens and others were recruiting Patriots. Governor Wright had been more or less correct. While there were a number of patriots, such as Pickens and other Presbyterians and Baptists, there were also a number of loyalists and neutrals. Many Georgia communities were on the outer edge of white settlement and clung to British protection against the native tribes. Some communities, such as Wrightsboro, were largely Quaker, who predominantly preached pacifism and obedience to the governing authorities. Loyalist recruits flocked to serve Boyd and Hamilton. Men like Colonel John Dooley, however, believed that the British were derelict in protecting settlers from raids by native tribes. By 1779, Dooley was a hardened veteran. The former South Carolina surveyor had recruited his own very well-organized militia earlier in the war, and he had lost his brother, Captain Thomas Dooley, in an ambush by some Creek Indians. On February 6, 1779, Dooley crossed the Savannah River into Georgia to attack John Hamilton, who ambushed Dooley at Keokie Creek, forcing him to retreat back across the river. Dooley remained there with his force of about 140 until he was joined by Pickens and a force of 200 or so. Pickens had heard that Hamilton was on the way to Carr's Fort, a blockhouse in Wilkes County, Georgia, which housed women and children and was guarded fairly lightly. The site of Carr's Fort, by the way, was recently unearthed by archaeologists. Dooley and Pickens crossed the Savannah River and chased Hamilton, who hurried into the stockade, but the Loyalist baggage was left outside in the rush. Dooley and Pickens then attempted to lay siege to Carr's Fort by cutting off the water supply, but before they could begin the siege, they received word that Boyd was on his way from South Carolina to Augusta with 700 new recruits. It seemed more important to prevent this militia from reinforcing Campbell, so they set off in pursuit of Boyd, though they were unsure where precisely he was headed. Pickens had assumed Boyd would cross the Savannah River where Georgia's Broad River branches off and planned accordingly, but Boyd moved north toward Cherokee Ford. On February 11th, as Boyd attempted to cross at Cherokee Ford, patriots at McGowan's blockhouse fired upon them with swivel guns. Boyd pled with the men in the stockade to allow his militia to cross unharmed and he would leave them alone, but they refused, forcing Boyd to go 5 miles north to cross. He sent his men across in groups on rafts. They then attempted to cross Vans Creek, about 20 miles south of modern-day Lake Hartwell, when a small but feisty patriot force of only 100 men under Captain Robert Anderson fired on them. The Loyalists flanked Anderson, forcing him to retreat. Boyd's losses were surprisingly heavy, 100 killed, wounded, and missing. Hoping to find Quakers in Wrightsboro who would lead his force to Augusta, Boyd moved in that direction. At 10 a.m. on February 14th, Boyd, unaware that Hamilton had already moved on from nearby Little River, began preparations to leave camp and rendezvous. Hearing their drums, Pickens sent a scouting party to closely follow the Loyalists and watch their movements. Boyd came to rest near Kettle Creek, about 6 miles east of modern-day Philomath. The scouting party reported that the enemy's guard was down. They were grazing their horses and slaughtering cattle they'd found on the way. Pickens divided his army into three columns, Dooley on the right, Clark on the left, and Pickens himself at the center. They advanced upon Boyd's camp. The attack began too early when the Patriot advance guard fired on the Loyalist pickets before their advance was performed as ordered. Boyd hurriedly made battle formations and led 100 men to hide behind a breastwork of fencing and fallen trees, springing a surprise attack on Pickens. Just as Pickens' men were taking fire from the hidden Loyalists, one of Clark's men shot Boyd, mortally wounding him. Pickens pursued the fleeing Loyalists back to the main force, but it took so long for Dooley and Clark to catch up that Boyd's adjutant, Major William Spurgeon, had assumed command and reformed the men. While attempting to lead a charge, Clark's horse was shot from beneath him, and even though he hopped on another mount, most of his men did not hear the orders and few followed, giving Spurgeon time to make solid formations. Soon, Pickens and Dooley reached Clark, and they fired heavily upon the Loyalists, who retreated just over an hour after the battle had begun. Their retreat left behind baggage and hundreds of horses which the Patriots captured. Pickens had defeated and virtually obliterated a force nearly twice his size. Loyalist losses in the battle are not known, but fewer than 300 men joined the British, who were abandoning Augusta due to the approach of Ashe. Boyd died that evening of his wounds, after giving Pickens his effects and a letter to his wife, and was buried in an unmarked grave. Very little is known about his life. One of the most notable soldiers at Kettle Creek was an enslaved black teenager named Austin Dabney, an artilleryman in the Georgia militia under Clark. Dabney, unlike many black males of the time, was sent to fight instead of his master, Richard Aycock. Serving under Clark, he was felled by a ball to the thigh, and a fellow soldier, Giles Harris, carried him to his own home to care for Dabney, starting a lifelong friendship. For his heroism, Dabney was granted a plot of 50 acres as well as a pension, and following the war, the state of Georgia purchased his freedom. He was the only black soldier in the Revolution to be granted land by Georgia. Though crippled, he did well as a farmer and used a portion of his money to send Harris' son, William, to college. William became an attorney, and his mentor, Stephen Upson, pushed for the state of Georgia to grant Dabney 112 acres of land, since his race precluded him from the 1819 land lotteries. William Harris also named his firstborn son, Austin Dabney. This victory boosted morale for the backcountry patriots of Georgia and South Carolina, and soon new recruits poured into Lincoln's camp, fueling the attempts he would make over that year to drive the British out. It also broke the morale of some of the Loyalists, and the British would more or less remain ensconced at Savannah until Clinton shifted the focus of the war south the following year. Thank you for listening. I hope you're enjoying Patriot Podcast and learning from it. But more than that, I hope it sparks you to research history for yourself and discover things you never knew. And if you have a passion for history, as I do, consider donating to this podcast. Even at the 99-cent level, every bit helps. It's not easy writing these episodes while working the hours I work, but I think it's important. Also, if you're interested in reading more about the American struggle for independence, including This Day in Revolutionary History, check out the Patriot Podcast Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Snows Island 1780. That's no caps, no punctuation, SNOWSISLAND 1780.